fourth case of the day, and that's 054608, and it's United States versus 1500/90 tablet bottles and Genendo Pharmaceutical.
Hey, please.
Good morning, Mr. Hoffman.
Your Honor, this Your Honors, this case is driven by Title 21, United States Code, Section 353A. The opinion was driven by it. The result in this case must be driven by it, and therefore, I start with the plain language of the statute, which the trial court neglected to follow.
I am so sorry to do this to you, but before you do, I have had a question, which may be only my question. The regulation that effectuates the exemption in 354A says that a drug en route to be repacked is exempt, quote, from compliance with the labeling and packaging requirements of sections 501B and 502B, D, E, F, and G of the Act. But those enumerated sections of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act in Title 21 have been repealed.
501 has been repealed. I do not believe the 502 series has been repealed. Your Honor is certainly correct vis-a-vis 501. We checked last week and found that the 502 series, under a different number, I think still exist. I didn't bring those numbers with me.
Well, neither.
Your Honor, if I may, I don't think it makes a big difference, and I say that because what governs here is 353A, that statute, and that statute states that these drugs are exempt from any packaging and labeling requirements of the Act. And that means everything within the Act, including Section 355, the NDA provision. So it really doesn't make much difference what the status of those sections are within the regulation, because the regulation itself, under the test in Chevron...
Well, here's what I'm going to ask of both parties, that there be supplemental letter, or, you know, if need be, we'll give you three to five pages to let us know from what specific labeling and packaging requirements Section 201.150 provides an exemption.
We will do so, Judge. But clearly as to 501 was repealed. And it's my recollection that would not be true for the 502 series, though they may have been renumbered. But we will verify that and submit a supplement to the court within whatever the court requires.
We'll send a little order out.
Would
okay,
the court
go
like,
ahead. And that took a few minutes, so...
And would the court like with it minutes. The likely impact of, if that is in fact the case, on this case, on how that might change the result one way or the other? In other words, does the court merely want an answer to a narrow question, or do you want some amplification on what the parties perceive to be the consequence of that?
Well, you might want to do that.
Okay. But at the end of the day, nonetheless, if we just look at 353A, it says that the secretary is directed exempt from any labeling or packaging requirement of this chapter. And that's very important because in this case, this chapter is the entirety of Title 21, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And which are, in accordance with the practice of the trade, labeled or repacked in substantial quantities in establishments where those products are, other than where those products are originally processed. That is the repackager, relabeler. It is important for the court to appreciate so that the court has at the end of the day the comfort level that a court should always have, that that establishment where the repackaging and the labeling occurs is a registered repacker labeler under the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act, which is regularly inspected by the Food, Drug, and by the FDA, and also which must itself comply with current good manufacturing practices.
Under your interpretation of the statute, as long as the drug is ultimately repackaged in an FDA-approved or a buy-in FDA-approved repackager, is anything that happens with packaging and labeling in the interim irrelevant?
Anything that happens prior to the time that it leaves the repackager relabeler is irrelevant. However, the drug must not be adulterated, because that is one of the conditions of the broad exemption offered by 353A.
But if we read the exemption as you propose, what purpose is served by the NDA's requirement that the Lipitor be packaged at one of the approved locations in Germany or Puerto Rico?
I would answer the question by almost reversing it. Unless the NDA packaging and labeling requirements have been exempted by the 353A exemption, what would be the purpose of having the exemption? Because the exemption says that it is exempt from the repackaging or packaging and labeling requirements of this chapter, and the NDA arises under Section 355 of precisely this very chapter. So in fact, it takes us into a circuitous argument. Unless and until one appreciates and understands the breadth and scope of the exemption vis-a-vis packaging and labeling only.
But under your reading, isn't the required packaging facility skipped entirely, and that step can't later be rectified?
Absolutely, and it is entitled to be, because at the end of the day, it still has to be an unadulterated drug, which it has been. It is not contended in this case, and it is expressly by the government been stated again and again, that it is not contended by the government that these drugs were adulterated, or that they were counterfeit. Then they also go through the hands of the licensed, or rather registered, inspected repackager labeler, so that at the end of the day, what comes out at the other end, finally to the consumer, is indeed the righteous product, which it is that the FDA would like to have seen.
How does the consumer know? You go to the drugstore to pick up your prescription of Lipitor. You go to the drugstore and you pick up your prescription for Lipitor, and it has an expiration date on it of, let's say, a year from now or 2 years from now.
Sure.
How do you know that that's an accurate expiration date if the product has gone through all this
in our case or generally?
Repackaging?
In our case or generally?
In your case.
Okay. Because that is the duty and the obligation of the packager relabeler, the one that has been licensed, to make sure the appropriate expiration date under the food drug and under our domestic regulations has been affixed to the package. They know, because it is the registered repacker relabeler that is required to affix the appropriate number based upon what it is finds out from the manufacturer about when and where this drug was manufactured. It, under our regulations, it's 2 years from the date of manufacture. Just because it comes in with a three-year expiration date because that was appropriate for a different market doesn't mean that the repackager relabeler doesn't amend that to the 2 years required by our laws.
How do you know that, though?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
How does one know that?
Because that's the repackager's obligation, and as Judge Holderman determined, in limine motions, that isn't the importer's obligation. That is the obligation of the repackager relabeler, who is regularly inspected by the FDA to make sure that the repackager relabeler does precisely that. I see that at this point I'm in my...
I'm going to give you the 2-3 minutes that we took from you earlier. So do you want it now or do you want it for rebuttal?
I'll come back in a moment. Thank you, Ron.
May it please the court, counsel. 16 years ago, in a case that is quite similar to the one that we're dealing with today, the United States v. Baxter, this court held that in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, that the new drug approval requirements reflected a congressional view that the way in which drugs are mixed and packaged is no less important than the chemical makeup of the drugs at issue. Well, Genendo is contesting throughout this case and here today that the second part of that court's holding, that the way the drugs are packaged, can be tossed aside as long as at some point a third party comes along and repackages the drugs.
Could a bulk container of Lipitor be shipped directly from the approved manufacturing plant in Ireland to the United States without any label, not in compliance with any of the specific packaging requirements, without ever stopping at one of the approved packaging facilities in Germany or Puerto Rico?
No, Your Honor, if it was not specified in the NDA. The Baxter Court essentially held that the NDA, from start to finish, specifies the recipe that needs to be followed, and specifically included in that recipe is the requirement of packaging. And the NDA provisions themselves specify that the NDA has to specify where the drugs are going to be packaged, as well as the processes by which the drugs are going to be packaged. So, if Genendo's argument was right, that 353A exempts all of the NDA's packaging and labeling provisions for drugs that are going to be repackaged, a drug that was packed in a place that was never specified in the NDA, and that therefore the FDA has never had the opportunity to inspect, indeed a place that has poor packing equipment, poor sanitation, poor humidity controls, that somehow the repackager could come along and merely by putting the pills that went through that defective process in perfect bottles with perfect labels would somehow remedy those problems.
Is Genendo right that under 353, drugs that have not yet entered consumer-directed commerce are not required to have any label or expiration date? Are they right?
No, Your Honor. The first of all, there is no such thing as consumer-directed commerce. The term is interstate commerce. That's the term that the statute uses. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act doesn't separate interstate commerce that's patient-directed from interstate commerce at large.
Is this the first time you've ever heard the term consumer-directed commerce?
It is, Your Honor. The point behind the statute is, and Congress passed this statute in 1938, and it's important to point that out because at that time it passed both the new drug approval requirements and 353A. The point was that Congress wanted to move our country to a system where drugs had to be approved before they hit the market and all of their particulars, not after the fact. The way Genendo reads 353A would read out the before approvals for the processing of the packaging, the process by which the drugs are passed.
So bottom line, is your argument that Genendo's agreement with Phil and Kathy's is insufficient to protect against adulteration, misbranding, et cetera? Is that your bottom line argument?
No. That is certainly part of the argument. That is the part that the district court deferred. It said we don't need to reach this. My bottom line argument and Congress's bottom line argument is that the first step in the process is that the entire soup to nuts recipe has to be approved. And if you don't follow that recipe from the very beginning, the fact that the drugs might somehow end up compliant anyway doesn't satisfy the fact that the drug, it doesn't alleviate the fact that the drugs start out as unapproved new drugs.
Well, speaking of Congress, in your brief you asserted quite a few times that 353A exempts imported drugs from certain packaging and labeling requirements, right?
Yes.
If that's the case, couldn't Congress have said so? Instead of using the broad language, any labeling and packaging requirements?
Well, Your Honor, I think that two things about that. First of all, by the absence of specifying the NDA provision in that exemption, they said so. You have to remember, Congress passed these provisions at the same time, and the NDA provisions were the centerpiece of this act. If at the same time they passed all these NDA provisions, which were designed to protect the American public, and a single exemption that doesn't mention anything about NDA provisions, it was meaning to take all of those things away, we'd have to presume, as this Supreme Court has held, what we don't presume, that Congress meant to hide an elephant in a mouse hole.
Let me go back to my first question to Mr. Hoffman. If 501B and 502B, D, E, F, and G have all been repealed and their replacements don't relate to labeling and packaging, where will we be?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that they have been repealed. I think that those provisions are still in effect, and we'll certainly address that in the supplemental brief. One of the provisions that is at issue is one of the things that comes up in these cases is that sometimes the statutes speak in terms of the section of the public law and sometimes the section of the U.S. Code. 502 is really 352, and 352C is specifically not exempted.
Why didn't you tell us that?
Pardon?
Why didn't one of you let us know that?
Well, in our brief, we always use the USC sections when we cited stuff, so we wanted to remain consistent with the code.
Well, okay, you may be right, but if you're not, should we default to the statute which says that drugs en route to a repackager exempt from any labeling or packaging requirement?
Absolutely not. Because on its face, that exemption did not exempt the NDA provisions. Second, that provision is not self-effectuating. That provision said that we're going to delegate to the FDA to create some exemptions. And although the term any is used, and I have to tell you, this is one of the things that was a little upsetting about the brief of Genendo, they interpret the word any to mean all. Well, and even cite the dictionary for that. Well, I looked at the same dictionary, and the first definition is not it. The first definition in the dictionary is one or some indiscriminately of whatever kind. The point was that the Congress directed the FDA to promulgate an exemption, and they didn't direct the FDA to exempt everything, because if they had done that, if that's really what they wanted, they just would have done it themselves.
And the exemption that was promulgated, the regulation 201150, on its face specifically does not include Section 355 new drugs.
Absolutely.
So why doesn't that just end the whole case?
Well, we think that it does.
Unless it's an impermissible interpretation of the statute, which
it is not, Your Honor. Chevron, it is quite clear, and the Baxter case, I think, reaches the same conclusion. This is a permissible interpretation of the statute by the FDA, that the exemption was not self-effectuating, and that it did not exempt from drugs to be repackaged all of the NDA provisions, and that the Secretary actually had to do something to effectuate any exemptions to begin with. Moreover, the FDA's interpretation is consistent with the public safety. So it's not only a permissible interpretation of the statute, which should get this Court's deference under Chevron, it also is the one that respects plenty of other case law that says public health statutes are to be construed liberally for the purpose that they're designed to address, public safety.
I don't know if this is in the record. I'm just wondering how often a manufacturer of a drug with an FDA-approved NDA changes its manufacturer packaging facilities to add, or add new facilities to the list that's approved.
I wouldn't know how often it happens, but I know that when it happens, under the statute and regs, they're required to notify the FDA so that the FDA can step in and say either we approve it or we don't. I'd like to conclude with one point because I see my time is short. Genendo has made this case in its brief about the price of the drugs and about importation of foreign pharmaceuticals. Well, for the FDA, it's not about that. It's about safety. And if the drugs had been manufactured in Laubeg, Ireland, as they were, and shipped to Chicago, and Chicago was not listed on the NDA as an approved location for packaging, and the processes had not been inspected here in Chicago by the FDA, FDA would take the same position. So unless the court has further questions, we believe that, and we request that this court affirm the decision of the district court.
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lorenzen.
The concept of the FDA's belief or mission that it is to protect exclusively the issue of safety rings a little bit hollow in this case being brought up in this court at this time. And I say that because they've held these seized drugs for 2.5 years. They have expressly stated that they will not test them, and that's because they prefer the illusion of the potentiality that these drugs might be somehow contaminated or adulterated, while all the while themselves contending that they do not contend in this particular case these drugs are adulterated or that these drugs are counterfeit. Therefore, safety really isn't an issue.
If I could interrupt, counsel, is it your contention that that drugs that are subject to Section 355, new drugs, come within the scope of the Regulation 201150? And if so, why, since that section is not mentioned in the regulation?
All we focused on was what Judge Holderman in the trial court focused on, and that was the concept of the new drug application, that this was not an exempt. Well, interestingly, Judge Holderman determined...
Actually, perhaps if you could just focus on my question.
I'm sorry, say that again, Your Honor.
Maybe you could just focus on my question.
Well, I think the answer to the question is because that was not the gravamen of the lower court's opinion. If I understood the court's question correctly.
We've got a statutory interpretation question here,
yes.
and a question about the validity of this regulation.
Yes.
And that's a de novo standard of review, so we don't have to focus on what Judge Holderman had to say
about correct.
That.
That's correct.
So if you would address my question, is a new drug that is subject to Chapter 355, Section 355, within the scope of the regulation, which contains the exemption?
If by within the scope, do you mean... That it is suddenly a new drug that has to again be run through the FDA's pre-market approval.
It's just
processes.
A straightforward question, counsel. Does the exemption apply to a new drug that is subject to Chapter 355?
I'm afraid I just don't understand the question outside the scope of the way I'm trying to answer it, and I apologize for
the
that.
The exemption itself only provides an exemption from the labeling and packaging requirements of Section 501B and 502B, D, E, F, and G. Which we're going to get the
correct.
Supplemental briefing on, but as far as my research is concerned, Section 502 corresponds to what is statutorily Section 352, which is the standard labeling and packaging requirements of the Act. Nowhere does the regulation mention an exemption from the labeling and packaging requirements of Section 355, which is the new drug section of the Act.
I beg to differ.
It seems to me that those drugs... New drugs
right.
that are subject to 355 do not come within the scope of the exemption. And if that's the case, are you arguing, if that's the case, then you would have to argue that that regulation is an impermissible interpretation of the statute, Section 353, in order to win here. And is that the argument you're making? Are you saying the regulation that was promulgated is an impermissible interpretation of the statute 353?
It is simply our position that any labeling packaging requirements, including under the new drug provisions, have been exempted on account of 353A.
So the regulation is an impermissible interpretation, in your view?
The 201150 is indeed, does not follow under the test in Chevron what is required for the government to issue by way of a reg in order to implement the meaning of Congress as set forth in the statute. So I believe that would be the answer, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Much left to say, but we have to rely on our briefs, and we thank the court.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Thank you, Mr. Lorenzen. We will take the case under advisement.